superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
She made her performance debut as a five-year-old discovering nature in the woods.
I spent a lot of time, you know, walking the paths in the forest and actually singing to forest animals.
moon child, come back to bed.
We'll catch up with Kelly Smith. But first, the ice hasn't formed on Lake Superior yet, but it's coming. And if you're out on it and you hear something that sounds like a Star Wars lightsaber, get off!
It really does change hour by hour out there.
We'll hear a scientific explanation of just how unpredictable the ice can be with very little warning. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've taken a walk outside this week or even looked out the window, it's been snowing. And weather forecasters say we're on track for a record snowfall this winter. We'll have more on that in our roundup of the week's regional news later in the show. But first, with snow on the ground, ice isn't far behind. That's good news for ice anglers and others who engage in activities on frozen lakes, but it's not always safe, and conditions can change in an instant. That's what 26 ice anglers on Lake Superior learned 2 years ago in February when they found themselves on an ice floe heading toward Brighton Beach, and maybe even two harbors if they had stayed on it long enough. Fortunately, they didn't have to and were saved by rescue crews from the city of Duluth. But just hours later, at least some were back on the ice, retrieving their gear. If they didn't learn from the experience, we did in a conversation with John Swenson, a University of Minnesota Duluth professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences, and Joseph J. Moore, warning coordination meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Duluth. Here's our conversation from back then. Welcome to Simply Superior, John Swenson.
Thank you, Robin. Nice to be with you.
And also welcome, Joe Moore.
Nice to be here. Happy to talk.
So let's just go right to the science. John, the lake doesn't freeze all the way to the bottom. The lake is very, very deep, but how much does it freeze? And how thick is that ice close to shore and how far out?
Well, that's a great question, Robin. And just a reminder that water has a very unique property, and that is that it reaches its maximum density, so when it's heaviest, so to speak, at about 4 degrees Celsius, 40-ish degrees Fahrenheit. If you continue to cool water below that temperature, its density actually decreases, so it becomes lighter. So because of that, when water freezes, it floats. So the ice floats on top of the lake, and that's a good thing. Otherwise, the world would be very different. To get to your question specifically, generally in the nearshore area, based on my experience, it doesn't usually get thicker than a foot or two, and that really hasn't happened much in recent memory.
All right. So, Joe, you are the warning coordination meteorologist. What sort of warnings do we have for how thick the ice is or isn't for whatever it is you want to do out there? And by the way, I mean, people are doing things from just walking and driving vehicles. We do have the ice road when we have the ice road going out to Madeline Island. So it's got to be strong enough to hold that. How do we know when it is safe to go out?
You know, that's a great question, and that's actually something that the National Weather Service does not really warn for, is what conditions are like out on the lake. We don't put out a warning to say that or any kind of a statement to really say if ice is safe to walk on or not. And part of the challenge with that is just it varies so much, even within a single day. When we look at, you know, satellite imagery of the lake forming and breaking up and the wind pushing it around, it really does change hour by hour out there. In terms of how thick the ice is, whether it's connected to the shoreline or not, whether it's starting to stack on top of each other and becoming less stable. It's just such a unique and continually changing phenomena that it's really just it's nearly impossible for us to predict at any one point in time whether conditions will be safe or not. Now, we do issue marine weather information, and outside of when the shipping season is closed in the deep of winter, We do issue nearshore warnings. We'll put out a small craft advisory if conditions are getting windy up to 33 knots, about 22 to 33 knots. When they start to get above 34-knot winds, that's when we issue a gale warning. And typically, you know, in the fall when we get a little bit of that ice, if we have a gale warning, that means that that ice is probably going to be moving around, even if it's in the harbor. And so we do issue alerts for wind and waves when we have water. We don't actually put any alerts out for whether ice is safe or not, because it really, it's impossible to tell.
And you mentioned just now when the ice is touching the shore. So there, I take it what you mean by that is there's times that the water might be open right next to the shore, but then a big chunk of ice a little bit further out?
Yeah. Yeah, that ice, you know, we look at it from, if you look at it from a distance from the land, it kind of all looks like one nice little sheet. But when you get up close, you see that there can be fissures, there can be breakages, there could be parts where the ice rises up. That can be due in part to the wind, to wave action underneath the water. Remember that lake, even real close to the shoreline, is not going to be solid all the way down. There's still some liquid water down there. And so there can be still, you know, some action that helps to break it up from underneath.
We are speaking with Joe Moore, Warning Coordination Meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Duluth and University of Minnesota Duluth Professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences, John Swenson. So, John, Joe just mentioned that, you know, the water is under the ice. What is the water doing under the ice?
Another great question, Rob. Basically, if we think about Lake Superior in general moving, most of that movement is driven by the wind. So the wind blowing across the water surface applies a force to that surface and causes the lake to circulate. So if we, the more ice we have on top of the lake, the more difficult it is for the wind to transfer its momentum to the water and move it. So it's not that the lake, the water beneath the ice is stagnant, but it moves less than it does absent ice. Joe brought up a really good point about the role of wind here. And in my experience, you know, looking at ice formation and dissipation on the lake, it's so very intrinsically tied to the wind patterns. And I think that, to circle back to your opening statement about people who are ice fishing getting into trouble, a lot of that is tied to switches in wind direction and the resultant stresses that are applied to the ice and then cause that ice to move if it can, if there's room for it to move. And so there's this really interesting feedback between the atmosphere and the lake across this surface of this solid, semi-rigid surface of ice that really leads to some interesting behavior.
And part of that behavior was last week. What exactly happened? I alluded to it headed toward two harbors. I don't know how far it would actually get, but, you know, suddenly they found themselves on almost a vessel, right? You know, a moving ice floe.
Exactly. And Joe can correct me on this if I mess up the wind direction a little bit. But my guess would be that at a certain point in the day, the wind came out of the west, northwest, with enough speed to exert enough force on the ice that was in place to actually break it off, much like a geologic plate on the Earth's surface. And that that plate of ice then became a life raft of sorts and started moving generally in an easterly, northeasterly direction, and that was the problem.
Where did it finally end up, or did anybody pay attention to that after the anglers were rescued?
Yeah, John, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but this is Joe, and I think what probably happened is some of that ice ended up getting broken up to the point that it kind of got enveloped by the water and started mixing down. And ice is lighter than the density of the liquid water, so it does float, but it probably got broken up by the wave action. If you saw some videos of what it was like when that incident happened, you can see the waves are, it's a little choppy out there. Certainly not white caps like we see in the fall and spring often, but that wave action probably helped to break up that ice and dissipate it. there was some additional ice that we did see form on satellite in the open waters, and we've since seen a lot of ice develop over the past couple of days. But it likely got absorbed by the lake that helped to cool the lake, and then later, 12, 24 hours later, new ice formed on top as the wind kind of calmed down.
Mm-hmm. But how quickly can these changes happen? I say this knowing the answer is probably very quickly.
Yeah, like John said, it can change if the wind direction changes, or if the wind goes calm for a couple of hours in the middle of the night, and we have cool temperatures, clear skies, we can get really rapid ice formation. And we can track this on our satellite. We get 5-minute update images from one of our weather satellites, and we can actually track that ice moving. We could get a speed on it. That's how fast it can move, is that we could use our tracking tools to get a speed of how fast that ice can be, you know, moving from one side of the lake to another, or developing or dissipating.
John, you captured some audio of the sound of the ice. Tell us what it sounds like, and tell us what's happening when you do hear that sound.
Absolutely. And I think any of your listeners who's ever, gone out on the ice, either to fish or to just recreate in whatever form, has probably experienced these sounds, and they're haunting and they're very interesting. So basically, when you have newly formed ice that's, again, using the plate tectonic metaphor, those plates of ice are interacting with one another, and they repeatedly, they break. So basically, the equivalent of an earthquake, we have an ice quake. And the ice quake releases energy, and that energy propagates largely as sound. So you get this fascinating breaking sound. And I think the best analogy I could use is to go to Star Wars. And if we remember the lightsaber sound, the sound of the ice breaking, that signal propagating, sounds like a lightsaber being used like a sword. That's the sound that you will hear if you're close to the location of the ice breakage. If you're farther away, the sound changes a bit. And in the same sense that when an automobile passes and you hear the loud music being played inside the automobile, and you really only hear the low-frequency bass tone, the same phenomenon happens with the sound in the ice, and that is, the farther away you are from the breakage, you'll hear the lower frequency component of it, and that will sound more like a whale song. If you've ever heard the recordings of, say, humpback whales in the ocean, kind of a low frequency, haunting, crying sound. It's a beautiful sound.
Well, it's a beautiful sound unless you're on the ice. And if you look around and you don't see any humpback whales, and there's not Obi-Wan Kenobi telling you to use the Force, you probably should get out of there. I know neither of you are necessarily ice rescuers, but if you do find yourself on the ice and suddenly it's doing something different than what you intended, what should you do? What would you do?
I've actually fallen through the ice. I've fallen through the ice on Lake Superior twice in my younger years. I'd like to think I'm slightly smarter and wiser than that now. I'm not sure. But I think it largely depends on obviously the specifics of what's happening. If I were ice fishing and I stuck my head out of my tent and realized there was suddenly an open water, I would stay put, and I would get on my cell phone and start making calls to get help. If I were walking on the ice and I were close to shore and I noticed that the ice seemed particularly thin and I thought it was starting to crack under my weight, I might actually lie down on the ice to distribute my weight across a greater area and reduce the stress that's causing the ice to break underneath me, and try to slither my way off to a safer location. Those are my go-to emergency responses.
Joe, while John's doing that, what are you doing?
I'm probably not out on the ice if it's that thin.
Exactly.
I'd probably refer you to Minnesota or Wisconsin DNRs for tips for going on the ice. But, you know, as DNRs like to say, no ice is completely safe. And so if you're going to spend any amount of time out there, it's good to review the tips that DNRs provide. Mainly, if you're going out on the ice, you know, be prepared, have a plan. The best advice I would tell someone if you're going to go out in the lake and there's ice cover, definitely bring a friend, because if you fall or a friend falls, it's good to have someone that's available that can call for help quickly. Your cell phone might not work and you will not move as fast if you fall through ice. Things can happen really fast, really quickly, and so it's good to have another person that can call for help.
Right. My mother's favorite expression was, good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. And John, your story of having fallen through twice, it seems to say you had quite a bit of experience. But my experience was at age 14 on Lake Michigan in Chicago, and it was so beautiful, and I thought this was so great. And then, whoosh, you know, I went right through. But luckily, there was an ice floe underneath the ice I was on. So I didn't get too wet. I was completely chagrined and learned my lesson very, very, very quickly. So
yeah, I'll add to Joe's advice, which is excellent, sound advice. I'll make a plug for the Weather Service, and that is check the weather before you go out. And in particular, pay really close attention to the wind direction. And if we yeah. have winds that are out of the east, that's probably the safer conditions, because it's going to tend to, those wind stresses are going to tend to keep the ice pinned in to the western arm of the lake, to the nose of the wolf, if you will. If the winds are coming out of the west and they're strong, I would exercise really good judgment and caution and maybe stay off the ice that day.
In other words, that would be the express ice flow to Two Harbors, right?
That's right. That's the, yeah. That's the, yeah. Exactly.
What
we do,
go ahead. Sorry.
I'll just throw a plug in for the weather forecast from the National Weather Service. You can find that at weather.gov. Something people might not know is we do produce a pretty high resolution forecast, so you can get the hourly details. You can click on the map, and we produce it down to a kind of 1.5 by 1.5 mile grid. So if you click down by the lake, you're going to get a different forecast than downtown Superior, than the Duluth Airport, and so. If you're looking on the website and you're going to think about going out on the lake somewhere, an inland lake or Lake Superior, just click on the map or enter the right zip code and you can click around and get the precise forecast.
Right. And I will reiterate what John just said about the wind, and you said too, Joe, because it is kind of counterintuitive. I thought before you're schooling me here that the biggest issue was whatever was happening underneath the ice. But the wind is, of course, above the ice and seems to dictate a lot. What about smaller ponds and smaller lakes? I mean, we've got quite a few of them around here. Obviously, they're not the same as the big lake, but not forcing you to do anything here, Joe, but, you know, what size lake would be A-okay?
Yeah, when it comes to the inland, more inland lakes and what lakes are safe, finding the locals is the best thing to do. Find the local bait shop, call them up, and ask, are people going out on the lake? What's the thickness like? If you know any ice fishing businesses around, any bait shops, resorts and that sort of thing, they're usually really in the know. And so even if you're just going to go out recreationally, those are a great resource for finding out if the ice is safe or if maybe there's been a change in the weather recently and the ice is not safe. Those people can be, those local businesses and local resources can be a great resource.
So I shouldn't be misled by the size of the lake. There is no okay under this size or square acreage or mileage?
No, because the weather pattern can drive really quick changes. And so there may have been a lake that was safe and there were some really strong winds. And even if it's got some chunks of really thick ice out there, it might not be stable enough beyond walking on. It might be unsafe for vehicles or unsafe for snowmobiles and that sort of thing. So definitely checking out from any nearby local businesses that might know what conditions are like on the lake. That's a great resource just to double check, just to make sure that things are safer. Those inland lakes tend to produce a lot thicker ice than whatever we're going to see on Lake Superior, because they tend to not be exposed to as strong of winds and because they're so much shallower.
All right. John, any other final thoughts on it?
Yeah, I just add to all the great things that Joe said there. If we get a heavy snowfall that accumulates on ice, the insulative properties of that snow blanket can actually degrade the ice beneath it. And I speak from experience on this, thinking it's safe because there's, you know, it was safe before the snowfall. And all of a sudden you might find yourself getting kind of wet because the addition of the snow on top caused the underlying ice to basically melt. Typically when you know, again, speaking from experience, when you go through the ice under those scenarios, it tends to be a little more of a gradual falling into the lake. Equally unpleasant, but a little more gradual. So,
all right. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin.
I are sure you don't want to go ice fishing on Lake Superior this weekend, right?
No.
That was my conversation in February 2021 with John Swenson, a University of Minnesota Duluth professor of Earth and Environmental Sciences, and Joseph J. Moore, warning coordination meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Duluth, about the ice on Lake Superior. Coming up, she used to sing to animals. Now she's sharing the stage with some of our region's favorite musical storytellers.
Winter's coming and we'll hunker down. Feed a fire here that won't burn out. Find some patience and some kindness too. Bow the ice that grew in me and you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. She's been described as a guitar picker with an old-timey vocal vibe, yet she says the words to the songs haven't always come easily to her. And she didn't begin songwriting until she was in her late 30s. Now she's sharing the stage with local musical storytellers like Charlie Parr and Brianne Marie and exhibiting what Americana Highways calls extraordinary songwriting and performance skills, yet without showboating. Her name is Kelly Smith, and she joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Kelly.
Hey there, Robin.
So your bio says you were raised in the woods by musicians near Brainerd, Minnesota, I understand. That sounds like a theme and variation on Little Red Riding Hood or something like that, or a musical one.
I don't know. I guess like you could fancy me Little Red Riding Hood.
A musical version. What was your musical and woodsy upbringing?
Yeah, and they do go together, really. My woodsy upbringing is I grew up over by kind of by Mille Lacs Lake in Minnesota, and my parents ran a camp, and so really up until the age of 5, I spent almost all of my time out at the camp, out in the woods, and I just was kind of one of those, what they these days they call like a free range kid. And I was really just allowed to roam. So I spent a lot of time, you know, walking the paths in the forest and, you know, hunting for tadpoles in the little swamp behind my house and actually singing to forest animals.
Okay. But a little more music in terms of your family. You said a musical family.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's 4 of us kids. And when my mother became pregnant with the 4th, she went back to college, got her master's in music, and became an elementary school music teacher. And of course, because she was a music teacher, all 4 of us kids were required to, you know, take the piano lessons and this and that. So, and then my dad dropped out of Catholic seminary when he was in his late teens, and he joined a band. And I think his first band was called The Guys. Mm-hmm. And then his second band actually was called Nirvana.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, right. I mean, it wasn't that Nirvana. It was the pre-Nirvana Nirvana. So he was in the original Nirvana.
All right.
So nobody would ever know. But yeah, just like a really rich musical upbringing, because my mom had all the classical music going and the, you know, the musicals like Sound of Music and things like that were always playing in the house. And then my dad had all of this amazing classic rock background and folk music and whatnot. So, you know, I would borrow/steal my dad's records and take them to my room and play them on my tiny little kid's record player. And I just always, always had music with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what about the trouble with words, lyrics, or what was difficult about that?
Yeah, I guess I had trouble coming up with words because, you know, verbal articulation has always been a struggle for me. I've struggled with some social anxieties and things like that throughout my life. And actually, I think growing up in the woods maybe was part of that. It wasn't really until I went to elementary school that I found myself in these large groups of people and felt very uncomfortable. And it was kind of like my words would just freeze up, you know, to the point that my teacher even had a special chart for me on the wall where I'd get a sticker every time I spoke above a whisper. Nobody gives me stickers anymore, though.
And I can understand communicating with human beings is a little bit different than forest creatures.
Yeah, for sure.
You got some stars and stickers, but then what? In terms of actually writing songs, when did that happen?
Oh, yeah, no, I guess you could boil it down to the classic midlife crisis. It coincided for me with the beginning of the COVID lockdowns and not leaving the house as often, like a lot of people weren't. I was able to really sit with my thoughts and my feelings. And I realized actually that I've been writing songs and poetry in my head my whole life, but I never thought, oh, I should try to write that down and organize it into a complete thing. So when that midlife crisis came and the COVID lockdowns came, I decided to just try it because I just thought it would be a healthy practice for me and sort of therapeutic.
And to clarify, were you already writing instrumental music or at least performing it?
Well, I've had music in my bones my whole life because of my upbringing. You know, at different times, I'd learned different instruments like the piano, and then I learned the drums. I did choir. I even played the French horn for a period of time, and then eventually the guitar. And then in my early 20s, I started having kids, and I just put all of the music away for over a decade. When it came to be about 35, I really attached to my guitar again. I would sit up late at night with it almost every night after I'd tuck all the kids in bed and teach myself old folk songs. I'd find a song that I liked by, you know, Doc Watson or Elizabeth Cotton or somebody like that. So I was doing music a lot from about the time I was 35 onward. Mm-hmm. Songwriting came a little later, so.
All right. Well, we'll get to listen to some of that songwriting. We're speaking with Kelly Smith. She recently dropped her first album, Moonchild. Why don't we listen to some of it now? I'm suggesting we start with the title track. Maybe you could set that up for us.
Yeah. So this one is called Moonchild. And I guess all I'll say about it right now is that it ended up being written as a conversation between two people.
All right. Here is Moonchild by Kelly Smith.
Come back to bed. Tonight is for dreamers, so lay down your head. She knocks at my window, her light kisses my face. Tonight is for dreamers, so I am awake. Beneath the stars I sway, I'll bring one home to my anchor, my stay. Moonchild, beware of all lurks round the bend. I'll pass through the shadows as night leaves today.
That was Moonchild from the album by the same name by our guest Kelly Smith. So you were talking about your guitar playing, and you mentioned some masters who you were emulating. You've been playing with some of those too, most notably Charlie Parr. Are you opening or playing with them, or both?
Oh man, you know what I'd love to do is just play a couple tunes with Charlie Parr in the back, like beforehand or afterwards or something.
For an audience, you know, or just fooling around?
No, just like sit around and jam. Mm-hmm. That would just be the best thing ever. But I also have the privilege and the pleasure of opening for him in Aiken on January 28th.
Mm-hmm. Charlie Parr, of course, comes to mind as a guitarist extraordinaire, and you definitely are living up to your reputation as a picker. And I'm wondering, am I hearing his resonator guitar, or are you just playing a little bit louder than most people?
Oh, in which song?
Oh, Marriage.
Oh, the song Marriage. So that actually is my producer, Joel Schwartz, and he's out of Toronto, Canada, and he's playing some really nice slide res on that song.
Oh, are you saying that I'm actually learning something by doing these shows and interviewing all of you, that I can tell a resonator guitar when I hear one?
I think so. Congrats. That's awesome.
All right. Well, we're going to let the listeners hear it too. Here's Marriage. I'm not even going to ask you to set it up. Let's let it speak for itself, right?
Let's do it.
By Kelly Smith.
Stay with me, my shelter from the cold. Run your fingers through my golden gray. Love, be kind, remember me this way. Steady hands to fill my empty cup. It's enough, love, it's enough. Did we almost lose each other? In the arms of one another. Charm. So take these years and into your loving arms. Did we almost lose each other? Come home, I'll go home. Winter's coming and we'll hunker down. Feed a fire here that won't burn out. Some patience and some kindness too. Melt the ice that grew in me and you.
That was Marriage by Kelly Smith with a definite resonator guitar bit going on there. Now you can tell us a little bit about that. What else should we have been listening for?
Oh, man, that was a really fun one to do. So a couple of things. The vocal that I tracked for that was we ended up using my scratch vocal. You know, I was just going to send a quick scratch vocal over to my producer. And I think I was running off to go teach guitar to a bunch of my students that day. So sent it over, and later on we're like, that's a pretty good vocal. And the other thing that I told my producer Joel about this song that I wanted was percussion. And this is the only song that has any kind of percussion in it. And I said, but I don't want, you know, a standard kit being played. So there's a percussionist playing on there by the name of Lyle Molson, and he's out of Canada as well. And he's hitting something with a mallet. I can't remember what he said exactly he did for that kick. And then you'll hear kind of this swishy percussive thing that I'm doing on an old banjo a friend of mine gave to me.
Okay.
And I'm playing acoustic guitar on that song.
Mm-hmm.
And then my producer is playing some resonator.
All right. Well, we've deconstructed that. Where can we hear more of your music?
Well, I've got my website. That's kellysmithmusic.com. And Kelly has an EY in it, which can be tricky.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's my Instagram. And of course, people can find me on Spotify and Bandcamp and all the other places.
Right.
So
that's Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y Smith. How about One to Take Us Out? And how about Dust, which is getting a bit of acclaim? You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I wrote this song for the family of my aunt who passed away. They live way over in California, and so we don't get to see them very often. But just recently, a couple months ago, my uncle came to Minnesota for a visit, and I was able to sit with him in my parents' kitchen and play this song on the acoustic guitar. And that was one of the most meaningful experiences I've had to date with writing music. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. We've been speaking with Kelly Smith, now mastering those song lyrics that were difficult at first. Thank you for joining us, Kelly.
Thank you so much for having me.
Just another early morn. The sun came up without you. The world keeps spinning like my head is spinning. It's all the same. That's more than I can bear. The birds, they greet the day with songs of old, songs they hold for those bowed low. They fly free just like a sign for you and me that this gravity give way someday, someday. Dust we come, and Lord, and dust we will return. The peace, the pain of every season's change. seems like yesterday your hand was warm in mine, and now you slip through my fingers. Dust. It's not that I'm afraid for you. You'll be light and I'll be blue. I can't recognize a world without your smile. It's not the same. It'll take a little time. From dust we come, and Lord, into dust we will return. The peace, the pain of every season's change. Seems like yesterday your hand was warm in mine, and now you slip through my fingers. Time walks on, and so will I. The sun went down without you, but you lie deep beneath the flower beds in my head. Still, your love nurtures me. Oh, dust we come, and Lord, and dust we will return. Pain of every season's change. Seems like yesterday your hand was warm in mine, and now you slip through my fingers. Seems like yesterday I opened up my hands and set you free. Dust.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Robin.
So, Rick, I mentioned before the discussion about staying off those ice floes earlier in the show that we were seeing some significant snowfall this season. You've got some numbers, although I don't think you were out there yourself measuring them, correct?
I was not out there measuring myself, but this is all according to the National Weather Service in Duluth. And with just a few hours left on the calendar in 2022, Duluth broke its December snowfall record. The National Weather Service in Duluth tweeted the news late on Saturday that we had enough snow to bring the city's snowfall total to 44.7 inches for the month. And that total broke the previous record of 43.3 inches set in 1950. Now already the winter of 2022-2023 is on pace to be the snowiest ever in Duluth, and probably Superior as well. The seasonal snowfall so far is double the 30 inches that would be normal by this time of the year. And we still have 4 months of potential snowmaking weather ahead.
Well, we better get used to it. And as we're out there trying to get rid of that stuff, we're hoping there'll be others out there to help. That could have been a real problem on the Minnesota side.
Yes, it could have been. The snowplow drivers for St. Louis County were looking at a potential strike at the first of the year, but the Teamsters reached a tentative deal to avert that. So after 5 months of negotiation and mediation, the Teamsters Local 320 reached a tentative agreement with St. Louis County Administration for a 3-year contract late last week, averting a possible strike. The union represents 165 snowplow drivers and other public works employees. The agreement includes a 3% general wage increase each year of the contract, insurance premium protection, a new apprenticeship program, and a 25-cent per hour stipend toward winter gear and other supplies, which had been a key point of contention between the parties. Members had voted to authorize a strike by rejecting the county's offer on December 19. The earliest the union could have filed its intent to strike since January 1st, but now they're just waiting for ratification of the agreement.
Okay, well, just like the never-ending snow, the Husky oil refinery explosion in Superior in 2018 has been a never-ending story, but there's finally a punctuation mark to it.
Yes. 4 years later, a federal agency released its final report late last week on the April 26, 2018 explosion and fire that caused about $500 million in damage to the Husky Superior refinery and injured 36 workers. Summary of the report from the U.S. Chemical Safety and Hazard Investigation Board noted that the explosion released 39,000 pounds of flammable hydrocarbon vapor into the air, and over 2,500 residents of the city of Superior were evacuated from their homes, and the city of Duluth, Minnesota, issued a shelter-in-place order during that time. The refinery was owned at the time by Husky Energy, which had The refinery was owned at the time of the explosion by Husky Energy. Husky then merged with Cenovus Energy, and in its report, the Chemical Safety Board details how the explosion occurred while the refinery was shutting down its fluid catalytic cracking unit to perform planned maintenance, a common process called a turnaround. Two vessels of the catalytic cracking unit exploded and propelled metal fragments up to 1,200 feet away, that punctured a nearby asphalt storage tank and spilled about 17,000 barrels of hot asphalt, which ignited and then caused the fires. A summary of the report details how the city of Superior's evacuation was based on the potential risk of a release of a highly toxic hydrofluoric acid, which was stored and used at the refinery. Although no release occurred, the risk was present because the hydrofluoric acid storage tank was closer to the point of the explosion than the asphalt storage tank, and could have been punctured by the debris from the explosion. The report also noted key safety issues, including lack of industry guidance, safety process knowledge, emergency preparedness, and essential safeguards and outdated equipment that failed to hold up during an extreme event. The release of the investigation took almost 5 years to complete. It was originally set to be released in late spring, early summer of 2019, according to the federal agency, which gets to the root cause of incidents and makes safety recommendations but cannot issue penalties. During the Trump administration, however, the agency was on the chopping block, burdened by underfunding, turnover of investigators, and unfilled board positions. A massive backlog of investigations formed and delayed the inquiry into the Superior refinery. The Superior refinery is set to reopen in early 2023. In the fall, crude oil was shipped to the refinery storage tanks in anticipation of the reopening. Approximately 350 employees and contractors will work at the refinery once it is fully up and running. The rebuild is expected to cost nearly $1.2 billion.
All right. Well, I don't know about reading the report, but if you're looking to curl up with a good library book, the Duluth Public Library is making it easier for you.
Yes. The Duluth Public Library is making it easier for more people to access its collection and checkout materials. Up until now, residents needed to show a photo ID along with a proof of address to obtain a library card. The policy typically results in 2 to 3 people a day being turned away. But since the start of this year, no proof of address is required, just a government-issued photo ID. Library manager Carla Powers said the old policy concerned her because it seemed to discriminate against patrons on the basis of their lack of a permanent address, and affected people who are already at the margins and could most benefit from using the library. People without a proof of address will now be eligible to receive an easy access card, allowing them to check out up to 4 items on the spot. They will also be provided with information about what additional documentation is needed to obtain a full access library card with additional capacity to borrow materials. Byron Johnson, the library's circulation coordinator, said he believes the new policy will benefit people in supportive residential housing, those experiencing homelessness, and residents who have recently moved. In a similar vein, the Duluth Public Library did away with overdue items in 2019. And in 2020, the library also offered curbside pickup service so residents could still access library materials, even while buildings remained closed to the public due to concerns about the potential for transmission of COVID-19.
All right. We've been joined by Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. Our theme song is composed and performed by Bruce Nelson of South Range, who is one of the few locals that our featured guest, Kelly Smith, hasn't performed with, at least not yet. We leave you with more of her music. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
Been hanging on for so long, and never hoping for a thing. You say that I am bound for a good end. A bit of faith will give me wings.